The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Understanding mindfulness, what that is, in some ways is the beginning of this path, and in some ways is the culmination or fruition of the path. That is, on the one hand, to start something, we should know we're in the Insight Meditation Center, you know, where we're doing mindfulness meditation. We should probably know what that is, right? But at some level, we have to grow into an understanding of what mindfulness actually is. And I know I'm still grappling with a kind of definition of what it is. And so in some ways, we don't have to be too worried about knowing exactly how to define mindfulness. But insofar as we're doing it, it can be useful to have a kind of working operational definition, something that we pick up and can use in ways to understand what's happening in our practice, and then to be open to revising how we understand mindfulness, and its potentials. Now, some of the reason that there's maybe some definitional question about mindfulness is that it's in the culture now, it's being used in a lot of different ways, right? We're kind of familiar with that. And even in the very origins of mindfulness-based stress reduction, how many people are familiar with that? That 8-week, that Jon Kabat-Zinn developed and is very widely delivered in secular settings. But Kabat-Zinn said something very interesting in an article from 2011 in a journal, Contemporary Buddhism. He sort of came out of the, I don't know if it's quite fair to say, came out of the Buddhist closet a little bit, but here's what he wrote. It was, when I read it, I was really struck. So, mindfulness-based stress reduction was developed as one of a possibly infinite number of skillful means for bringing the Dharma into the mainstream. It's never been about MBSR for its own sake. It's always been about the M. And the M is a very big M. I've always considered mindfulness to be a universal Dharma that is coextensive, if not identical, with the teachings of the Buddha Dharma. By umbrella term, I mean that it is used in a certain context as a placeholder for the entire Dharma. So you can see how mindfulness has become this umbrella, this pocket into which many things are put. And in secular settings, when Buddhist teachers want to say Buddha Dharma, or they want to say Buddha Dharma Sangha, they say mindfulness. And that's fine. We can use the word in that way. But it leads to some confusion about what the construct of mindfulness actually is. And so I wanted to offer one definition that's been meaningful for me. it emerges from Shinzen Young, who's been a main teacher of mine and has done some teaching here. And he this is not a traditional definition of mindfulness. This is his own synthesis of different aspects of mindfulness that he defines as a threefold. He's kind of has a mathematical mind. So mindfulness is a threefold skill set working together. So what are the three skills? The first is concentration. And concentration defined as the ability to pay attention to what you want when you want to. And this is concentration is distinguished in the traditional Buddhist psychology, right? There's wise mindfulness and wise concentration. They're distinct, but there are very strong relationships between the development of insight and concentration. And in the suttas, there's often a real strong connection between mindfulness and samadhi, concentration. And we can consider concentration a kind of skill that is, it's relevant to our mindfulness practice, but it's also valuable in anything we do. You may have noticed, like, concentration makes anything better. No matter what we're doing, when the mind is gathered, not obsessed, right? We can get obsessed with things. That's not a gathered mind. It's not that the attention's stuck on something. It's that it's resting with it. And it makes pleasure more nourishing, and it makes pain more tolerable. It's good for listening, it's good for work, it's good for... And I notice in my own life, the times when I am suffering, the quality of attention is almost always fragmented. If I'm in something difficult is happening, some bad mood, something, the attention is being bounced around like in a pinball machine. It's a lack of stability. And so some of what we're doing in cultivating mindfulness is cultivating this gathered, stabled mind, stabilized mind. That's the first component. Let me just add one last thought. The Dharma, these teachings, before there is sufficient concentration, they are a kind of just another flimsy philosophy. The taste, the flavor of the Dharma is accessed through concentration. And without it, the teachings just, they feel a little thin. And they're transformative. Potential isn't sensed directly. Okay, concentration. Clarity is the second component, which means to develop a kind of higher resolution, greater clarity into what we're seeing, right? You know, like a television from the 70s versus I saw in a store, like, not HD, but ultra HD. And it was like a different world. The way, I mean, it was just like, oh, this is a completely different species. Like, they shouldn't both be called TVs. But there it was, right? And in that higher resolution, that greater clarity, details emerge that just literally could not be seen on the television from the 80s or 70s or something. And this is important to see more detail, to see experience in greater detail. Because from the view of the 70s television, everything looks more concepts are much more real. We sort of solidify the world into things, whereas if we can actually see more deeply, we see the texture of experience, which is not a world of things and selves, but a world of sights and sounds and feelings and thoughts. And that world has much more potential freedom in it. Our sensory world, we could say, gets tangled up when we're seeing at that low resolution. And what's actually arising, it's like all these different channels of data, all our five senses and our mind, all of that gets tangled up in a way that makes the self solid, that makes the world solid, that makes the future solid. This perhaps is what the Buddha was talking about in the Bahia Sutta, if you're familiar with it, of the instructions. In the seen, let there be only the seen. In the heard, let there be only the heard. So we're moving from a world of things and selves to a world of experience arising and passing. And we do that through this cultivating this skill of clarity, sensory clarity. And the last equanimity. It's concentration, clarity, and equanimity. And equanimity being defined in different ways, but maybe most simply, not pushing or pulling on experience. Not pushing or pulling on experience, letting experience come to us rather than reaching out to hold and mold and manipulate experience. To allow what's arising to arise, to allow what's passing to pass. And not generate a kind of internal friction with what's happening. And these skills, concentration, clarity, equanimity, they work together. They work together to transform the experience of what it's like to be alive. So this is one potential definition to consider, and it may be useful to just look at times. What look into your own mind during practice or out of practice. What's happening in the concentration sphere? What's happening in the clarity sphere? What's happening in the equanimity sphere? And one might be quite high, one might be low. You don't have to look in a kind of with grasping, right? You can just look. And asking that question may help us calibrate our practice, direct our energy skillfully. So as always, whatever is useful in that, please pick up and explore and leave absolutely everything else behind. Okay, thanks.